Hey folks, welcome to the show. Hey Sharad Tupran, we are in the middle of monsoon season, and I know monsoon is what you live for, don't you?
I do. I like it, and I'm excited about today's chat because we always talk about how the narrative in the VC industry is shifting. They're looking for path to profitability, and the company that we're talking today is traditional business with solid metrics, I guess.
No, absolutely.
Hyper growth, cash burn models.
No, absolutely. And that way, it's always very fascinating to understand businesses which have a very solid foundation, and their problem statement is very different. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome Nishit Gupta from Sapna Carpet Mats. Just to give some additional context to our listeners, Sapna Carpet Mats has been around the block for some time. Company started in 1984, and they, as we speak, hold a 50 to 55% market share among branded plastic mats pan India. They have a distribution network of close to 30,000 retail stores. They're also present online. It's a 100% family owned concern. They did roughly around 130 crores of top line in FY23, and I think Nishit has plans to expand this aggressively by the end of this fiscal to 200 CR, and he joined the business in 1996. So he's been also around the block for some time. And Nishit, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good, Nikhil. It sounds so impressive when you put it like that.
No, it is impressive.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be here on the show.
No, the pleasure is all ours, Nishit. And one of the things that I kept on reading when we were, researching about Sapna was that there's always been, I think, a focus or a vision of, catering to quote unquote Indian homes and local sensibilities, right? I think that's how even the company was founded, in terms of the tastes or the local flavor that is required in a very specific product. So just want to kind of understand, how do you see the market? And what do you exactly mean by local sensibilities? I mean, we are talking of a product which sounds from the outset a commoditized offering, right? I mean, design elements aside, but effectively, it's something which is so we are surrounded by. And how do you kind of, differentiate on such a, I would say, pervasive product category?
Right. No, so I think to take you back to how my father started the company and what was the thought behind it. So this was way back in the 80s when India was a different place from what it is today. And, the economic landscape also of India was much different. So the idea that my dad had was that, he wanted to bring affordable home decor products to Indian customers, which were functional, which were value for money, and which gave them a sense of having a unique product and which would make their homes look nice. So he always, like when we were growing up, he would always tell us that, think of mat like a poor man's carpet, because not every Indian middle class household can afford a carpet. So that's what we are trying to do. And over the years, we've believed in that philosophy and always introduced products which are relevant to, Indian homes. And we are trying to keep up with how India is growing. So as economic affluence grows, we are heading out into more categories which will be not that mats are not aspirational, but consumers who probably moved on from mats to slightly more I would say higher ticket items, but at the same time making them much more within reach for Indian customers.
And the Indian customer itself is also sort of changing, right, in terms of their tastes and desires, not just affluence, but in terms of what kind of products they like. And there's obviously impact from traveling, impact from social media, where you get a view into what the other countries, other parts of the world. How do you sort of address those shifts? Like, is it sort of easy to transition and predict what will sort of tomorrow's consumer want? Or is there some data analysis that you sort of extensively do? Is it a lot of just let's see what's sort of selling and what's sort of popular or what is being appreciated in the market and sort of tackle it like that? How do you sort of go about that?
So when I actually didn't mean affluence as the only determinant of bringing products to the market. Some of these points are exactly what we had in mind, what you mentioned. Okay. The Indian consumer is much more well-traveled. He sees products in different countries, through different mediums, like social media or something. Homes are designed in a different way. Their lifestyles have changed. Families are maybe more nuclear than they were 30 years ago. In terms of home maintenance, there are different needs. So I think these are the broad set of parameters which we put to kind of decide what category we want to go into. And, talking about research and bringing new products, I mean, there is a little bit of a dipstick approach in that, you know, we do our own internal surveys in terms of, what consumers prefer and what could be unique, what unique things could we bring to the market.
Right.
So we try to build the offering, keeping all of these things in mind.
I mean, I think what is very fascinating is that, like, a few weeks back, we were talking with this company called Fashionza. Now, they basically are a platform which enables brands to, manage their fashion brands specifically to manage their backend supply chain. So effectively, if, I don't have any manufacturing capacity or capital, and I mainly want to be on the consumer side, I can basically tap in Fashionza and they would, do the entire sourcing of the base product for me. Now there, someone like Fashionza, they would often opportunistically, throw social media trends to me as a brand, which would actually affect my design philosophy one way or the other. So that's the data that they are kind of pulling in, because they are kind of looking at the entire value chain in an end-to-end fashion, right? Whereas, I mean, but in your case, you guys are manufacturing, right? You also have your own branded presence.
Yeah.
You do some white label as well. You are doing end to end, right? You have the entire value chain absorbed within yourself. Where do you get those inputs to kind of, pick the pulse of the customer?
Right. Did you ask me where do you get?
Yeah. Where do you, like, for example, for say I'm a brand and I'm using someone like Fashionza, probably someone like Fashionza being the tech enabled platform that it is giving me some sort of, insight into the
customer. I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
Initially when we used to sell plastic mats, and I'm not even going very long back in time, maybe like 6 or 7 years ago, we would not really have any connect with the end consumer.
Right.
We would only get the feedback through the intermediaries like retailers, what does well, what doesn't well, what doesn't do well, what colors, what designs, what constructions do well, and we would manufacture and just pray that, we are on spot. About 5-6 years ago, we, just out of a desire to be online, we started selling our products online on Amazon. And that's when we started realizing that, some of these products that our retailers tell us that, consumers prefer this, they actually don't do well for us on Amazon. And here we are actually interacting with end consumers and other designs or other colors are doing well. And that's when we thought this online medium is a powerful platform for us to at least gauge consumer preferences and tastes, even if the volumes are not that great, but we get an idea of, we started scaling up our presence on Amazon, on other platforms, and we started pulling in data from that and then tried to corroborate, again, changing our product mix. Then going back to retailers that, we change this in our assortment. Are these selling well for you? And most of the times the data would actually coincide.
that's very interesting because you know, a lot of D2C companies that we speak to, early stage D2C companies, sort of startup, I mean, they all were digital first and sort of 100% digital. And in the last 1.5-2 years, right, we've seen a lot of these digital companies try to become omnichannel, try to sort of have a retail presence, try to partner with retailers in some shape or form, right? And I think the verdict is that you need presence everywhere. Like most people are sort of going towards omnichannel that D2C alone doesn't really. And you're sort of coming the other way, right? I mean, you've got the harder part, which is retail distribution networks. You've got those set up and now dabbling with the idea of having a D2C presence as well, right? How does sort of the revenue, like is D2C even a meaningful piece of the overall revenue in terms of percentage or is it very, very small?
So I'll tell you, as a company in our DNA, we always, like although we're not a very big company in terms of sales, but we've always taken very long bets. And when modern retail came in the early 2000s, you know, like Big Bazaar and DMart, they used to be a very small part of our sales. And now they are kind of, I wouldn't say dominant, but a significant part of our sales.
Yeah.
So what I feel is, I mean, online sales, e-commerce is a work in progress. Mm-hmm. I think the easy hanging fruit is being taken right now. You know, like mobile phones, which are very standardized, or grocery. I think that's where most of the spend happens. Or, you know, fast fashion. That's where, but I think 20 years down the line, this will be much different. Yeah. And the proportion of sales that we get from e-commerce will be much higher than where we are today. And for that, we need to start off today so that, you know, we build up our presence, consumers know us, and, you know, we understand actually what to do.
Yeah.
So we treat it as a very important part of our business, and we see it growing for us. Obviously, we haven't figured out all the pieces of the puzzle, but I mean, we give it a lot of importance because that's where we get actual consumer insights, and it helps us to improve our offering in general. Offline, it's the same customers. It's just that they're buying from a different medium.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, you know, would be good to kind of get a sense of, like you mentioned, obviously modern trade, like in terms of your overall pie, like I'm guessing modern trade is there, general trade is there. You're selling through third-party platforms. You're also selling direct, I guess, through your own website, right?
Yeah.
To a certain extent. And I was, I think we ran into something where there was some noise around, you guys are also looking at opening like flagship stores, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, is the long-term game here is to kind of have end user visibility. So hence your own platform and your own flagship stores are something that you want to focus on more and more and more over time, or you want to kind of, you know, have a more channel driven approach at the end of the day.
I think it's
everything.
I totally buy into the everything model. And of course, when I say everything, we will have to kind of weed out what doesn't make sense.
Right.
But, you know, so there are different things that play at each channel.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you are going to a modern trade, it immediately gives you visibility in a large number of stores across different states in India where, you know, you might or might not have presence by yourself. And it gives you some immediate acceptability as well with consumers.
Yeah.
With online sales, like I told you, we think it's a medium for the future. And this is the right time to start investing in it. And this is where we get direct consumer insights from. Now, on flagship retail stores, what I think is, again, it will give us direct connect with the consumer, which will help us optimize our offering, our inventory. And so not just, you know, what we are offering, but it will help us in our working capital needs, because if we get more relevant products, then we are not stuck with unsold inventory. And it will help us improve our margins as well, because we'll be at the retail end. So the first flagship store should come up in Aurangabad in sometime in October. And if that goes off well, I think the plan is to, you know, eventually follow that model as well. But you know, India is such a vast country, like one or two retail stores cannot compensate. You cannot cater to everybody through those. So it will be a hybrid model for, you know, the foreseeable future.
And, you know, once you have a direct relationship with increasingly better presence with directly with the consumers, is there a potential sort of designing or an advisory layer of business that can be built around home decor? Obviously, sort of advise people on what carpet goes well, or sort of even help them furnish an apartment when it comes to rugs and carpets and mats. Is that something that you guys think about?
Honestly, not so far, but I can, when you talk about it, I can see the potential, but I don't think we are that deep into that that aspect yet.
Yeah. How do you sort of see growth, right? Like, is it sort of, you know, we're sort of we're doing well, but there's a lot more runway. We haven't hit all the consumers. It's sort of doing more of the same, just keep selling more and sort of let the business grow by itself. And over time, you collect more and more data points, you penetrate deeper into the market, you establish more direct relationship with consumers and sort of just ride that curve, right? Is that how you think about growth, or
honestly, how we, so one part is the products that we manufacture, plastic mats, which has been the legacy business.
Yeah.
Now in plastic mats, we are a very well-known brand and, you know, it's almost generic to the category.
Yeah.
So because of that, we have a very good retail presence. So the idea was to leverage the brand and the distribution network to basically introduce more products in the floor covering category. And eventually, over a period of time, be the, you know, in the consumer's mind, we should have that space that whenever he's thinking of a floor covering, he should think of buying a Sapna product.
Right.
At the other end, I mean, for us, when our team goes to a retailer, they should command a higher share of the business from the shop. So that was the whole plan, and that is still the plan. So help us grow the distribution with new products, and in turn the brand will grow and it occupies more mind space in the minds of consumers, more physical space in retail shops, and that's how the growth will come in.
When you say, like, you interesting, when you mentioned floor cover, that seems to be like the broad umbrella under which you want to operate in, right? I mean, more and more SKUs in adjacent product categories, but at the end of the day, the universe is going to be that. So, I mean, could you also, you know, give a explainer of sorts into what all entails within floor cover? Like, plastic mats is obviously one thing. You know, you have carpets, rugs. I'm sure there are other materials. Like, what is the ecosystem? What all is out there when you say floor covers?
I think anything. When you, whatever you step on, I mean, that's very elementary, but tiles or bath mats or linoleum coverings or like rugs, carpets, dhurries, or I would say even, floor.
But like when it comes to like tiles and etc., they kind of are part of the civil work one way or the other, right? Is that also something that interests you, or is it more, movable kind of product categories? Which can be just put placed on site?
I mean, that does interest us, but right. I think we need to have critical mass, understanding the category, engaging with the trade in terms of, where we would fit in better. Because, if you talk about, say, tiles, if you talk about any product, there are, already entrenched players. But we have some complementary strengths that we can bring to certain categories.
Right.
So I think it just, what we're trying to do is, pick up the ones where we are stronger and first build up presence and scale in that, and then move on to the next one.
Right. There's, Nishit, like there's a China 2.0 narrative, right? I mean, India is kind of becoming, or at least the popular mainstream view is that when it comes to manufacturing, the spotlight is on India, and there are lots of countries which have realized that there is an inherent, like what was seen in the service industry probably 15, 20 years ago is now being seen on the manufacturing end. And you obviously are also an exporter, right? There are certain product categories, and one was also seeing that how you differentiate in terms of the configuration or specs of the product itself when you are shipping it to the US or Egypt or whatnot. Do you see exports also as a larger and larger part of the game for you? Or you think that effectively the domestic market itself is so underpenetrated, and there is so much more leeway or room there to grow. That's going to be your short to medium term priority.
So I think I'll come back. I come to the China 2.0 that you mentioned. I think personally, I believe it's more hype than reality.
Right.
Because, I mean, you know, manufacturing doesn't come overnight.
Yeah.
You need to have the whole ecosystem in place for companies to come in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, while there's been a lot of China bashing after COVID, and, you know, so everybody talks about, but, you know, most companies still retain big presence in China.
Yeah.
And the reason, I think it's the shift is happening, but it's very mm-hmm. gradual. And it's going to be a long time before any meaningful manufacturing actually moves out of China, because, you know, regulations, infrastructure, all of this, these things need to fall into place. So it's,
mm-hmm.
I mean, personally, my view is it's fashionable to talk about, you know, China plus one, but in reality, I think it's some time away. Mm-hmm. Coming back to your second question, exports. Yes, I think they are going to be a big part of our, you know, story. And one of the reasons we actually ventured into the new products is because, you know, we have customers in, you know, several countries. And we thought, you know, if we get into newer categories, this is something that we can offer them as well. And, I mean, there are still a lot of countries where we are not represented at all.
Right.
So there is definitely a lot of room. And, I mean, India, it's a continent by itself. There is a lot of room to grow here as well. So
I mean,
it's
I think it's
both, I think.
What I meant on the export angle was that, is there some competitive edge that you see that a player like Sapna can bring to the table when it comes to, you know, be it... And on the China 2.0 narrative, I understand, like, what happens often is that one really overestimates what can be achieved in a year, but underestimates what can be achieved over a decade. Well, but there's obviously, I mean, there is one, there are two lenses to the narrative, right? That how importers are refraining to do business with China. That, I think, I totally agree with you. There's a lot of lip service to that idea, but I don't think it kind of percolates all the way to the bottom line. But there's an entire the second lens with which one sees the China 2.0 narrative is that there's a fair amount of infra investment which has happened in India, right? Which often may percolate into like lower shipping costs, lower cost of doing business in general. So yeah, I mean, I do agree with you that this is something probably one won't be able to see immediately.
Nikhil, I mean, I see a lot of traction happening in like new age businesses, service
right.
businesses.
Right.
But for manufacturing...
Manufacturing is different, right.
The landscape hasn't really dramatically changed in terms of... And I think a big part of that is labor laws. You
Interesting.
Know, and, you right. know, so I think until you really bring in some big bang reforms, I right. mean, you won't really get, you know, large scale manufacturing. So... What I have always felt is as Indians, we tend to overpat ourselves on things that will happen in the future, might or might not happen in the future. And we don't really pat ourselves for the things that we've done, mm-hmm. you know. So manufacturing is one area where we have always had a lot of potential,
yeah.
a lot of promise, but we've never really... delivered on that.
But you see that all across, like, I mean, in manufacturing, for example, like the three key elements often people say is land, labor, and capital, right? When it comes to manufacturing. So, I mean, labor, you obviously, you gave a perspective. What about things like, you know, access to credit? Do you see things
no, I think
different?
Access to credit has dramatically improved
okay.
over the last 15 years. But that's what exactly what I was trying to say. Like, you know, the capital, if you hear of all big deals happening in, say, VC space or investments coming in, it's all in, you know, software or new age or fintech or...
You're not seeing those flows in manufacturing. Like, you're not seeing the banking sector open up to manufacturers.
When have you heard of, like, a $5 billion factory being set up? You know, it's... Or, like, even if it's been announced, it takes... Like, you know, I remember in the 90s, I heard of this... Korean company called POSCO,
yeah.
Like big steel company. They had invested in Odisha and that plant still hasn't come up. So, I mean, you know, manufacturing, I think we have a long way to go.
Got it.
You need to ease out. I mean, as somebody who operates a manufacturing business, I see that, you know, it's still not very easy to do business. It's getting easier progressively, but still some time away.
I mean, the reason sort of a lot of VC money or institutional money chases early stage, sort of modern startups is in the hope that it's a hockey stick kind of a growth, right? Manufacturing is sort of different. I mean, it's historically probably relied on public markets to access equity capital rather than private equity money or VC money when it comes to a certain stage. Is that something that you think about, that sort of there is a time when you should sort of be listed and access formalized capital from the public markets? Is that something
you think about? I think we might reach a stage where, you know, once we get into, hopefully we get into a stage of, you know, exponential growth. So that's something that will happen with time. We're not there yet, but yes, I mean, we might require that in the future.
Yeah. Because I think most of the sort of capital, use of capital for a company like yours is to sort of CapEx, right? It's sort of building more facilities, adding more manufacturing lines and sort of try to bring them up. Is there any R&D element to the kind of business you do, like in terms of researching newer fabrics or researching newer materials for floor covering, or is it sort of a...
I would say more than R&D, it's designing. Of course, there are aspects of R&D as well in terms of, you know, improving the functionality of the product. But isn't like path-breaking research, to be honest. I mean, you know, in terms of how you improve the... to give you an example, the performance of the product under sunlight, how can you make it last longer, or, you know, if you have to impart different finishes to the product. But I think I would say more to do around, functionality of the product researches.
And in terms of the... Sorry,
just because you said sunlight, I wanted to sort of ask you, it seems like you guys are fairly ESG forward in terms of running your facilities with solar power and doing a fair bunch of recycling, right? Is that sort of something important to the ethos of the company?
Yes. I mean, it's always been, I mean, even before it was fashionable, I mean, so, you know, we actually generate zero waste in our facility. Everything that is manufactured and the scrap that comes out of it is recycled. I think 3-4 years ago, we decided that, you know, we should use a lot more solar energy into our plants. Even in packaging, we try to optimize whatever we can, you know, adding recycled content to it. I mean, so it's always been in our ethos that, you know, we should be kind of green, and so it's not a corporate philosophy, I would say, you know, it's always been there with us.
In terms of from a consumer preference standpoint, I mean, like, for only recently, you know, we were in conversation with a shoe manufacturing company, and there the narrative was that, you know, younger people, they want non-leather shoes. Leather shoes as a segment is something because of, you know, requirement of maintenance, wear and tear, lack of manpower also to actually help you in maintaining unless you're an enthusiast. So there's a trend there, right? There's a clear secular tailwind towards non-leather. Do you see something, you know, parallel within your industry? You know, because, like, often in Western countries, like the way people, from a home furnishing standpoint, the way people buy home furnishings in India versus the way people buy in Western countries, it's very dramatically different, right? And I have a sense that in India as well, as more and more people are, kind of getting into that aspirational bucket, effectively, we are just like a decade or two behind behaviors or sensibilities. For example, if you speak to like someone like me and Sharad, like, we might like take furniture on rent, right? We might not purchase them, or we might actually, you know, take something which is disposable. We might not actually go for something very permanent and put a lot of block a lot of capital into it. How does that translate into your particular segment in terms of the material, in terms of, you know, the type of SKU that you think are the, you know, so-called hero SKUs for you in the future?
So what we, like I told you, first what we try to do is build the product mix around, which consumers we are trying to address.
Yeah.
The things that we keep in mind is the product has to be affordable.
Right.
So, like, for example, carpets, you know, we can, I mean, growing up, I remember buying a carpet used to be like a, you know, like an event in the house.
Yeah.
Growing up, I think my mom bought two carpets and she made sure that, you know, humne ghar mein carpet lagaya, don't step on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So it used to be a big thing. So we used to understand, not knowing what price the family has paid for that particular product, but we used to know, okay, we've spent a fortune on this.
This is a valuable thing.
Yeah, on a valuable thing. So yeah. One had to take care of it and feel a sense of pride. Now, what we want to do is, what we are doing is sort of democratizing the product. That, you know, if you want to buy a carpet, you don't have to spend a fortune.
Right.
You will an equally nice product at a much more affordable price, which is easy to maintain. You don't have to sell your kidney to get it washed or anything. It's right. Very easy to maintain. So it helps you with your home decor. And that's the approach.
Right.
You know, affordable and easy to maintain.
Right. Right. You said, like, a two-part question. One is what keeps you excited on a daily basis, and the other is what keeps you up at night. It might be the answer might be the same thing.
Yeah.
But the latter is obviously one wants to know about, you know, the kind of risks and concerns you see in your segment.
So actually, I live and breathe business. So I'm always excited about the next opportunity, the growth, and, you know, what can we do? You know, if there are crazy ideas in the team, let's try this out. So personally, I think, I'll tell you what's been going on in my mind for the last couple of years. So the first time we imported carpets, the company that we are importing from is an Egyptian company.
Right.
And they are probably the world's largest or the second largest manufacturer of machine-made carpets.
Right.
So when I was talking to their sales team, they were like, you know, we are like a $600 million company, out of which $150 million comes from Egypt.
Right.
And I was shocked with that number. I mean, $150 million is almost 1,200 crores.
Yeah.
And in a country like Egypt, which is similar in you know, economic profile to India. So, I mean, the market is so vast. I mean, if you extrapolate that to India and triangulate the numbers. When we were bringing in the new products, there was obviously a lot of opposition within the team that, you know, this is going to cannibalize our product.
Right.
But I think what excites me is the opportunity that we have in front of us. And there's never been a better time in our company in terms of the challenges we've faced and how we've been equipped, you know, to face them. So I think we have a long, you know, like a big opportunity in front of us that we need to capitalize. And there are so many mediums and outlets that we need to go to.
And what worries you?
Sorry?
And what worries you? Does anything worry you? Or, you know, competition? I don't know. Yeah.
No, I don't think competition. Because I think, you know, we've had competition for so long, and I just realized you keep doing your own thing without looking over your shoulder. You know, we do fine.
Right.
So
the market share clearly supports that view.
Yeah. I mean, that's historically what I've thought. And, you know, the more you keep worrying about your competition, of course, we keep an eye on, you know, what people are doing and all of that. But I mean, we don't worry ourselves to death with that. I mean, as long as you keep innovating, create new markets, create new sales mediums, you know, you generally end up doing well. So.
Right. No, thank you, Nishit. This was very insightful. I had a ball. No, we'll obviously be keeping track of the business. And no, wish you all the best. And with that, this is Nikhil Arora. And with me, it's Shar Tupran signing off.